Hello and welcome to our weekly podcast of Who's Here in the Hamptons. I'm Dan Rettina, your host, broadcasting from my home in the Hamptons, where I have lived for over 55 years. I've written a dozen books about this glorious place, and I've seen it grow through the years from small tourist towns, quaint fishing villages, and a summer playground for high society to what it is today, a world-class resort for celebrities, artists, musicians, authors, and billionaires. In my podcast, I will bring you interviews with not only these people, but also prominent local people who have helped shape the Hamptons. Welcome to Dan's Talks. My guest today is Lenny Ackerman, an attorney in East Hampton who's also a developer and also an author. And he's written a new book called Moments Out of Time, which he's going to be having a reading, I guess, and quite a Q&A at the Hedges Inn in East Hampton on August 5. What is the headline of the book? What is Moments Out of Time? Why that?
Well, over the course of last several years, I've been writing out snippets of childhood memories and thoughts for perhaps columns for the Mountain Messenger, the weekly that I write for, as well as themes for book ideas. And as I've kept this little folder of these snippets, I've mentioned to friends, acquaintances, dinner mates, some complete strangers, what I was doing, that these were not childhood stories. These were memories as adults reflected on today of our childhood adventures growing up, our friends, the times we've lived in. So there came a time after I finished Labish's Journey that I thought I would put pen to paper and actually formulate some of these snippets into a book, for which I, you know, also did sketches and watercolor paintings to accompany them. And, you know, there's, you know, approximately 35 or 40 little snippets about some of the wonderful times as youngsters that we suffered and some of the hard times. And I thought it would be interesting.
Let's talk about some of the ones that stand out that you would love to tell about.
Well, the one that I think resonates, at least for me, the most was when I was a child of 6 years old growing up in Rochester, New York, and it was Christmas time. And of course, we did not celebrate Christmas at our home. We celebrated Hanukkah. And I had a little girlfriend named Nancy who lived down the street who celebrated Christmas. And I pestered and pestered my mother to take me down to Sibley's, which was the big department store in downtown Rochester. I wanted to buy Nancy a Christmas gift.
You were how old?
6 years old. And my mother reluctantly took me to Sibley's. She gave me $5, which was very big money at that time. And I went up to Santa Claus and I bought a Christmas gift for Nancy, had it wrapped up. Christmas morning came and I got up early and I walked down three houses down the street to Nancy's house and I rang the bell. And Nancy's mother came to the house and she said, "Lenny, what are you doing here? It's Christmas morning." And I said, "I have a Christmas gift for Nancy." And she looked at me and Nancy was standing behind her and the tree was behind them. And she said to me, "Well, I thought you didn't celebrate Christmas." And I said, "Oh no, we don't celebrate Christmas. We celebrate Hanukkah, but I wanted to bring Nancy a Christmas present." And her mother said, "Wait a minute." She closed the door. And a few minutes later, she came back, and I'm still standing outside in the cold. And she opens the door, and she opens her purse and hands me a $5 bill. So that's the kind of thing that I remember all these years. The cover of the book has a picture of my birthday party when I was 6 years old. And pictures and memories long back, I decided to jot some of these little things down. And that's what Moments Out of Time are about.
What years did that cover? Not in Kuala.
I was born in 1939, so that would be 1945.
The war was just ending. So I was
That's
born
right.
in that year as well. What month are you born?
I was born in 1939. I'm 86 years old.
Yeah, what month?
October.
I'm older than you by 3 months.
And we're still cooking, you and I. We're still cooking. We're
how,
still.
How old are you when at the end of this journey that you made and out of this book?
Oh, I've written columns through basically my young years until, I think most of these stories are written before I got my first bicycle, which was, about 12 or 13 years of age. Because once I got the freedom of a bicycle, I was all over the place. And these stories are early stories. The war years, I remember very well. I remember my mother crying when FDR died. I remember the debates on television between Adlai Stevenson and, I guess it was Eisenhower. You know, I've got a lot of those stories. Did you get a chance to read Labish's journey?
I went through it. I saw the, I guess they call it a bill of lading, where they list the passengers and all that. I
Yeah,
have.
right. Well, you see a lot of early growing up years as the youngest child in the family. I had a lot of memories of those early years, and some of those are reflected in the book. But Labish's journey is the memoir of my father as a 12-year-old. And when I did that, it stirred in me, in doing the research and writing Labish's journey, it stirred me to go back in time. And a lot of these stories came out of stirring and marinating that sort of historical pot.
That book was a year ago, came out.
Yes, that's right. I'm trying to do a book a year. This is my fifth book. The first two books were just a compilation of columns that I've written. But since then, I've done a couple, I did a book called Fishing Home Waters, and then Labish's Journey, and now this book. And now I'm actually doing the research for my first book of fiction. I'm writing a story that centers around two youngsters growing up in Maine, who spend their summers on an island in Maine, camping and fishing and hunting. And these two boys are based upon the characters Henry Thoreau and a Native American Indian named Joe Polis, who traveled together throughout northern Maine in the 1850s. So I've taken on a big task here. I'm working very seriously on this.
Well, as I understand it, you have a house up in Maine and you commute.
Yeah, well, it's more of a camp. It's a fishing camp. It's very, very high up. I just came back yesterday. I was up for a week and I went to Campobello doing some research. Have you ever been there, by the way?
No, I've been to Maine, but it was black fly season, so we didn't
No,
get.
No, I know, but I. A cabin there, and it's a good place for me to read. I've been doing research at the University of Maine at the Bangor Library for developing my characters. I find the research really interesting. And when I write these books, I outline them and then I sit down an old-fashioned Olympia typewriter. I try to write 2 hours a day if I can, but I need to get away to do it. It's hard doing it out here in East Hampton because there's such demand on my time. But it's like you and your columns. I mean, what inspires you to sit down and write a column, right?
Just comes up naturally, I guess.
And that's what it does. But writing fiction is very different. So far, everything I've written is about true events that have happened, my father's life, my weekly experiences that I've written for the Mountain Messenger. I started also, this is my second year of writing for a magazine in Maine called Maine Woods. And I mean, not Maine Woods, it's called Maine Boating. And I've written a couple of columns about camping up in Maine and excursions that I've taken. Magazine writing is very different for me. I've never done it. You do it all the time, of course. But Maine Boating is a, it's a Maine magazine, and I'm writing for them now, and I find it really interesting. Very, very interesting. Find a good topic.
Do you remember any memories from your early years in the book about with the war, the Second World War?
Oh, certainly. I do. One of the stories I tell about the soldiers used to go on the train past our house, go down to the beach at Lake Ontario and practice amphibious landings. And as kids, we'd watch the soldiers on the trains, and then our parents would take us down to the beach and we'd watch come in from the lake onto the sand, the shores there of Lake Ontario. It was a very, very exciting time. And I remember us as kids trading military canteens and shirts. And even to this day, I fish in World War II antique shirts that I find in stores all over. There aren't too many anymore, but I have a collection. That's what I wear when I fish. I wear these old military shirts and jackets and things. So I have a lot of memories of that time.
Let's see. Where in Rochester were you? Pittsburgh?
I grew up in the city of Rochester on what's called the North End, where the lake is, Lake Ontario. Most of the people on my street worked at Eastman Kodak.
Tell us a little bit about how your ancestors wound up in Rochester.
Well, my father and his family grew up in a little town called Kipple, K-I-P-P-E, which was on the border of what today is Ukraine and Russia. And this was during the period of the pogroms and the beginning of the Bolshevik Revolution. And young Jewish boys were fodder for the Bolsheviks. They would come into town and take them right out of the yeshiva schools, and they would put them into the armed forces. And my grandparents sent my father's brother, when he was 13 years old, after he'd been bar mitzvah, had sent him to America. And the descendants, the early settlers of this little town, had migrated in the 1890s to upstate New York when the Erie Canal was developed. They were tailors, they were bookbinders, they were artisans. And my father's brother had emigrated as a child. And because of the threat of the pogroms and the anti-Semitism, my grandparents decided to send my father at age 12, before he was bar mitzvah, to America to be with his brother. And they bought him a ticket for a ship in Hamburg. So as a 12-year-old, speaking only Yiddish, my father traveled by himself across Europe, Eastern Europe, Ukraine, Poland, and Germany to Hamburg. And at Hamburg, he was to get on a ship to America. The First World War had just begun, and there were no longer ships going to America. And they put this 12-year-old child on a boat to Buenos Aires, Argentina. And that's where he spent age 12 to 17. And that's what Labish's journey tells the story of, how he survived, how he was bar mitzvahed in Argentina, how he came to America, still carrying the little talis bag that his father and mother had given him. And he started a life. He met up with his brother in upstate New York, in Elmira, New York, and he started a life in Rochester.
What did they do up in Rochester?
My father was a peddler, a junk peddler, a horse and buggy for a while, and then an old Ford truck. And then one day he was parked in Rochester and someone came up to him and asked him if they could park their car on this property where he was having a sandwich or having lunch. And my father, being the entrepreneur he was, said, of course. And from that, my father got the idea of opening a parking lot in Rochester, and he spent his whole life running parking lots there. He was in the subdivision business, so to speak, for parking of cars. And that's what he did his whole life. Winter, summer, all the time, except for the Jewish holidays. He didn't work on the high holidays, entrusted others to, to collect the nickels and the dimes.
How did you wind up in East Hampton?
Well, I went to Rutgers undergraduate school, and they had a program where you could go to college and law school at Rutgers and State University in 6 years. So I went to undergraduate school, and then I graduated to law school. When I finished law school, I went to New York. I practiced law in New York, and I was doing corporate work in a small firm. I was married, and one of our clients invited me to come out to East Hampton, had a house on Briar Patch Road. And my late wife and I, we had no children then. This was 1966. We came out and it was late fall. The pond was out and we walked along the pond. And I said to Judy, "Judy, we're going to live in East Hampton someday." And she said, "Oh no, I could never live here. It's too isolated." And in 1968, I bought my first little house on Egypt Lane. And in 1972, we moved out here permanently because I wanted to live in the country. I wanted to be a country lawyer. That was my, that was my incentive. And we stayed, and we've been here since. And then Judy passed away in 2017, and I still work it and enjoy it.
You've done some developments as well as...
Yeah, I did. Yes, in the course of things, you recognize me for what I did in Bridgehampton and built that corner where Starbucks is. And then in East Hampton, we did some mostly commercial development. I never did any residential development, but I stopped doing that when my wife got sick and just devoted myself to taking care of her and also taking care of my law practice.
Let's end this by talking again about some of the things that are in the book that you mentioned earlier, which are these short pieces and about things that happened to you.
Well, let me get a copy. Just one second. Let me get a copy of the book. Easier. So some interesting pieces. Growing up as a youngster, there were a few summer camps to go to. The one that most youngsters, Jewish youngsters, went to was called Camp Seneca on Seneca Lake. But my parents were not able to pay for that. So there was a Baptist church on the corner of our street. So I was 11 years old, and one of our neighbors said, "Why doesn't Lenny come to camp at the church?" And I know that my mother and father had a long discussion, but of course they spoke Yiddish to each other, so I wasn't exactly sure. But the net effect was that they sent me to this Baptist camp. And so I wrote a story about what it was like growing up in an Orthodox Yiddish-speaking home, going to this camp. It was fun to participate in all the sports activities. However, it was a bit uncomfortable during mandatory worship, and there was no way of getting out of it. I did not know how to respond to some of the religious language, especially about Jesus, but I got through it, and I wasn't the worse for it. Those are the kind of experiences that stand out that I remember today. I also tell a story about a man who, African-American, who worked for my father in the parking lot, who had survived the war, but had come home from the war a drunkard. And my father would take me to visit him on Sundays to dry him out so that he would come to work on Monday at the parking lot. And the reason he took me was that I used to spend all my summers and weekends working in the parking lot for money for college. And this man, his name was Lawrence, and I became very, very friendly. And we would gossip and talk, and he would tell me about his time in the military. He had been a prize fighter on a ship. And of course, after the war, he came back broken. And I didn't understand that, you know, being a youngster at the time. And I wrote a story about visiting him and going with my father on those Sunday afternoons. You know, he was one step above homeless. And so I remember those things, and they've stayed with me, you know, me all these years. So these are some of my stories, some of the stories, some of my friends that I grew up with. There's several stories here. A friend of mine, his father was always looking for someone to go sailing with him down on Irondequoit Bay in Rochester. And he had a son named Bobby Spector. And his son and I were the same age, and he wanted his son to have company. And I'd go sailing with him. And that's how I learned to sail as a youngster. Not very good at it, but those are the kind of, you know, events that stay with you your whole life.
Thank you so much for telling me about your life up there. In addition to the things we have in common, which I did not know, I'm a graduate of the University of Rochester.
Right. I didn't know that.
Quite well. And I wanted to thank you for your time, and I hope to get over to see you at the Hedges on August 5 and hear more about your life and your book.
And thank you, Dan. Stay well. Take care of yourself.
You too.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.